igual da minha filha, do contato. And the trade union, this exercise that is taking place here, we are taking it very, very seriously. It's something that is close to our heart because of the kind of work that we do on our day-to-day basis. When Busa was here, they didn't bring anything to the table. And UBUSA is a very huge organization which has to take this matter very seriously, because a lot of lives are affected by the policies that are channeled by UBUSA in the members that are with UBUSA. Agri SA, likewise, is a very huge organization. They have clearly stated that 80% of the farmers that are in South Africa are affiliated to them, are their members. I want to just allude to the historical context in which this exercise is necessary. It's not a secret that workers in the farming industry are exploited. In fact, the kind of exploitation that is taking place here can be associated with slavery. So these are the people that I was hoping, I made it a point that I'm not going to miss this particular workshop, because I was interested what Agri-SA was going to bring to the table to this particular workshop. I want to be honest that I'm very, very disappointed by their presentation. Firstly, let us just dispel the myth or myths that have been presented by Busa here, that wage discrimination results in job losses. Job losses, structural adjustments that are taking place, are endemic to any business because of innovation. Any business that does not happen only to agriculture. Therefore, when the structural adjustments, people embark on a number of measures, including mechanization. Let me give an example here. When a high star was introduced, right, in the receiving of a supermarket, all those millimills, those bags of millimills that were carried in the shoulder of a laborer, the hyper is able to carry 50, 60, up to 100 of them. Which means, therefore, that that supermarket does not need those people that used to carry those millimills. So, it's endemic to any business that there should be structural adjustment. It cannot be blamed on the introduction of the minimum wage in the agriculture. Secondly, shedding of jobs can be attributed also to the neoliberal policies that are happening in this country, where employers are not willing to employ people permanently, to give decent jobs to people. It also can be attributed to the global recession. Those are just but the few of the things that as a result to job shedding. So why the parliament decided to embark on this? Why the parliament decided to have the SG? It is because they could see what is happening out there. They could see that they cannot just watch and not do anything. So it's very important that when we leave here, when Agri-SA leave here, they should put it in their agenda that they should come up with something concrete with regard to the issue of the minimum wage. I'm looking at their presentation here. They said that if there is any adjustment on page 6 in the first bullet, if there is a need for any adjusting of the minimum wage, it should be coupled with productivity improvement, right? Otherwise, it will aggregate lack of investment, balance of payment pressure, cost of doing business, and high levels of unemployment, which the economy is already facing. When you look at that, and you interrogate that, that can not only be blamed on the introduction of the SD, it can also not be attributed to the introduction of the minimum wage. All those factors that are raised are factors that are coupled with a business, running of the business. Any business, not just only agriculture. The type of research that we're getting there in terms of the world report that they have presented, that I have been in the bullet four that they say higher education and training remain insufficient. The government has introduced the SDA. Have they done anything to make sure that those unskilled workers that we are talking about have been reskilled? There are farm workers who are on the farm for all their lives. There is no initiative that is coming from the farm owners to make sure that they get to school, they get the skills that are necessary for their business. Those legislations that were passed by the government, the SDA, the PCEA, the LRA, the sexual discrimination, and even this one which we are busy being workshopped on, which we hope it will be implemented when all these workshops are done, are meant to mitigate those adverse and abject situations those farmers, those workers in the retail have found themselves in. And we are not going to end with these workshops only. We are prepared to go an extra mile as COSATU to make sure that this minimum wage is implemented and is put in place as a legislation. Now, I want also to allude to the fact that in his conclusion, he is saying that structural adjustments to accommodate to accommodate higher wages, right, will result in job shedding, increased mechanization, and consolidation of farming units in endeavoring to maintain competitiveness and profitability. That is not only as a result of this exercise that we embarked on. That is a myth. Every business including agriculture, has gone through cultural adjustment. So the point that I'm trying to make here is that the government has sort of tried their utmost best to invite everybody so that they can make an input, a valuable input here. So agriculture has got a voice in the Agri-SA. We are waiting for that voice from Agri-SA to say what is it that they are putting on the table. Thank you.
Thank you, Sakayo. Honorable Olive.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have a couple of questions again. You know, we haven't heard, as usual in these presentations, much about the unemployed. And you raised the question about the NDP talking about the need to create a million agricultural jobs. Could you give us suggestions on what would help the industry to create some or all of those 1 million jobs? If you have 37 or 35,000 farms currently in the country, that works up to about, if my math is correct, in the order of about 30 additional workers per farm. So we have to, as a country, be realistic about how exactly are we going to convince every farm in the country to employ about 30 or so additional people so that people can get jobs. Now, obviously, there's a cost to pay those salaries, and I'm wondering whether you've given any thought to what could be done to assist farmers or to assist the industry to be able to help create jobs, because what's happening, as you pointed out, is we're losing jobs. We're not creating any jobs. We're actually losing jobs, and the trend is always down, and the NDP says the trend must be up, that we must employ more people in farms. Do you know of any country, secondly in the world, where they have an unemployment rate, including those who've given up looking for jobs, of about 34 or 35%, where they have implemented a national minimum wage? Because if we don't have countries that have tried this, then we're taking it that we don't know what the effects are. And then there was several comments about the Western Cape farm strike last year from certain quarters, who some of them have left now. But Professor Arun Borat and Benjamin Stanley from UCT made a presentation where they showed in the presentation that in fact Western Cape farm workers are among the highest wage earners of all farm workers in the country. The second highest was Gauteng in terms of provinces. As AKSA, does that study bear out your own research or your own evidence that in fact Western Cape farmers, Western Cape farms and Gauteng farms pay the highest wages in the country? Because it would be interesting to know whether you disagreed or agreed with them. Because obviously if the highest paid farm workers in the country go on strike, there may be political reasons that they've gone on strike and not only economic reasons, which personally I believe is the case, that there's politics involved, not just money. And then finally, we're debating here a national minimum wage. We already have a sectoral minimum wage in 11 sectors that's been declared. Some are negotiated through bargaining councils, structures, and so on. Do you believe it's necessary to have a one-size-fits-all national minimum wage? Or do you say we should carry on with a system of minimum wages set in each industry separately, depending on local conditions? Or do you think we should have no minimum wage whatsoever? Do you have an opinion on that? I mean, I don't know what your opinion is. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Kusumzi. Hello, is my surname from Numba. Chair, I don't have many questions. I think I have one or two. But I want to start with the, I think, the opening input from the chairperson of Agri-SA, which in his opening skilled people keep them busy during the day, but of course letting them work in their farms. That statement, I think, was not wrong. Can we correct that when we get people, wherever we get them, you're saying that just keeping them busy while they are generating profit for your own farm or any other enterprise, by the way. So we can't, when we talk to employees or people that are generating profit for our businesses, refer to them as they have been kept busy. And I guess that's why they were so comfortable in their comparison of salary in the Southern African region to say they are at the highest. Of course, according to the numbers, they are highest. But the reality is that as South Africans, we will not wait for Botswana worker or employer of Botswana for us to talk on our conditions. No, we won't do that. And this kind of workshop is meant to have this engagement so that we address what we think is improper between ourselves, employers and employees, including our government. So we will not wait for anyone to talk on our behalf. Furthermore, I think that graph that they showed us in comparison to other countries in the Southern African region demands us in South Africa to also link with our brothers in Zimbabwe and say, how do we carefully deal with the regional minimum wage? I think that's another lesson we can learn from that.
You are off the mic.
Okay, I'm back now. I think that's another lesson that we can learn from that graph. A question that I wish to ask from the AgriSA is that on their presentation slide, page 5, there's a blog which, the first blog which they talk about wage bills of plus minus 14.5 billion in 2013 and 14, 13.3 of total costs. Now one wants to get clarity there whether if that 13.3% of their total cost is made 13%, what is their profit range? And it has been one of the things shared in the previous presentation that was missing, where we could business people coming to present without giving us their profit rate, so that when they make the outcome of the implementation of minimum wage that will lead to job decline and heal their profit, we could perhaps be in a position of being sympathetic with them. We can't, because we don't know currently how much of their profit is. Or as a sector, I'm sure that we have those statistics, and we would like to also get an understanding in that regard. Maybe I would also last teacher want to talk to the issue of skills that I think Honorable Mantash spoke to, the issue of skills. If you're saying you're going to rather as an alternative to the minimum wage for you to make profit, you would rather employ those who are more skilled and get rid of the unskilled workers or lesser skilled. Our understanding is that you should be in a position to understand as to why our country is among those who are at the lowest level of skilled labor. It is among other things, our history of apartheid capitalism that took place before 1994, and how do we then address that? Exactly, I think we should be having a plan to address the issue of skill shortage in the sector. It cannot be that you are employing people and keep them unskilled and unskilled and wait for a debate of changing their conditions and say, we're going to get rid of you and go and get those skills. Where do you get them from? Because if we're to, in fact, make a very thorough analysis on that one, you would realize that those who are less skilled, in fact, statistics say in this week showed us that it is black youth majority who are unskilled or lesser skilled than their white and Indian and colored counterparts. Now, how do we then, as sectors of our economy, including agriculture, address that area? Do we have plans to take agriculture? I think that those are the few questions, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. The time from Kotatu Koga.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to start off on a note of saying there are, you know, within these, what could be seen as confrontational engagement, there's also the basis for constructive engagement with agriculture. And I think obviously all of us regard agriculture as a critical sector in our economy, both in terms of food security as well as its potential to create employment. We may not agree with the NDP as to how that's going to be done, but we do agree that it's a critical sector and it's underperforming in relation to employment, and there's a lot that can be done. Secondly, we also welcome the fact that AgriSA has not come out against the national minimum wage. And maybe I could ask whether I read their conclusion correctly, that in principle they're not opposed to the national minimum wage. Their debate is only around the question of the level. So having made those preliminary comments, I think, we need to look at, in more detail, at what the sectoral economic conditions are that have posed problems for agriculture. No one, for example, has spoken about the global economic crisis in 2008-2009. The way the presentations have been made, it's like it never happened. But we know that over 1 million jobs were lost over 2009. And that's precisely when agriculture in recent times lost all these jobs and then regained a number of them, as I outlined earlier. But secondly, there are a whole range of issues. You know, one of the presenters spoke about agriculture being price takers and that they get no subsidies. But this isn't cast in stone. This isn't a law of economics that this has to be like this. As you know, the presenters are very well aware, before 1994 there were the subsidies, there were the marketing boards, agriculture was operated in a different way. It seems like AgriSA has bought into liberalization, but they complain about the unfair competition from agriculture in other countries which is subsidized. But you can't have it both ways. Either you want the state to intervene and help agriculture, or you want to go on your own and operate in a free market and then deal with the consequences. So there are a number of things that can be done. One is in terms of state intervention, and my information is that the government is working on an agricultural policy action plan to supplement the IPAP. Does AgriSA have any comments on that? Secondly, what would AgriSA say about competition policy? And the fact that a lot of the inputs, for example, from Sasol, POSCO, etc., the fertilizers, and other inputs, are controlled by monopolies, and therefore we need competition policy to bring the prices of those things down. And then in terms of being a price taker, you are supplying to the retail sector in South Africa, which are massively concentrated, as we've seen with the scandals around bread and other basic foods. Those retailers have excessive power, and there is a question there about the relationship between the retail sector and the agricultural sector. And finally, in terms of economic conditions, at least, the role of the state in procuring food directly from agricultural producers for people basic foodstuffs at affordable prices could provide a major boost. But there are a number of other things that governments could do. So instead of getting involved in a race to the bottom type debate about how low we can push wages, what are the proactive suggestions that AgriFA can make for more proactive economic strategy for the sector? On the question of being law-abiding citizens, you know, I really don't think AgriFA is being quite frank with the committee in that regard. Because the message they're sending out to South Africans is that minimum wages are bad. Minimum wages destroy jobs. And therefore the message that they're sending out to the constituency is not observe the minimum wage, create greater productivity, involve your workers, skill them, train them. If you can get around paying the minimum wage, then we support you in that. That is the subliminal message that they're sending out to farmers. I have heard AgriFA come out very strongly and condemn the widespread violation by farmers of, in terms of them refusing to pay the minimum wage. You don't hear that at all. And we come back to the point that they're saying the minimum wage is a lot lower than the average wage. That is just not correct. Please respond to the stats that I quoted you, which says that the median wage in agriculture is R1,733 in 2013. That is a stat, it's an official figure. 50% of workers in the agricultural sector earn below R1,733. In other words, 50% earn below the minimum wage in agriculture. So we must address those realities, and it would be good to see AgriFA come out and speak to their constituency about that particular question. You know, so it's not good enough to say the farmers receive a signal. The AgriFA is not a passive player in this thing. They've got to actively encourage the farmers to respond in a particular way, because they are sending out a particular signal. And internationally, the experience is that employers have been able to adapt in various ways to higher minimum wages. And in South Africa, what is the employer's first response? Their first response is retrench. Let's get rid of workers, because it's easy for them to do that. And I think that one needs to take responsibility for that. And then finally, I think on the point raised by Honourable Ollis about the loss of 73,000 jobs, Professor Hall quoted the figure of 26,000 from March to June. If you look at her presentation, that's all she does. She just says a 3 to 5.5% loss in jobs, which is correct. It's confirmed by South Africa. And from March to December 2013, which is a longer period, it was 50,000. Yet the latest figures do confirm that figure of, I think it's 73,000. But we've got to look at the big picture. We've got to look at the long trends. And I think that, you know, we mustn't be disingenuous when it comes to statistics, because we also got to acknowledge the fact that a lot of the lost jobs in agriculture post 2011, as I outlined earlier, were regained. In fact, many more jobs were created between 2011 and 2013, which is also a period of rising minimum wages. 100,000 jobs were created in agriculture between 2011 and 2013. So it is a fluctuating seasonal effect in terms of job creation. The question is not to get trapped in these narrow debates, but to look at a proactive strategic vision as to how we can grow our agricultural sector in a meaningful way.
You're done, sir?
Yes.
Thank you. The next person is the gentleman there.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair. My name is Matthew Parks from Kotatu. I'll just be quick and just add a few comments to my colleague Neil's input. I think just to comment on The presentation refers to extremely rigid hiring and firing practices, which is the Labour administration. I think you're right to ask which part of it. If one looks at 2008, when we had a global economic crisis, we saw we lost a million jobs in the country, including jobs in agriculture. But then the relief was put aside that whole debate for labor legislation, making it possible to hire people or to fire people as well. I think it's correct to say that the real problem with broader global economic conditions. It's good to hear Chair that Agriete mentioned the BFAP report about 150 rand being insufficient for a healthy daily food intake. That's about 50% higher than the current sectoral minimum wage, right? But Chair, I think the whole debate is time seems to be for at least some business part about blaming the farm workers for being greedy for wanting these high wages, you know? When the farm workers are in strike in Jordan, some of the media articles say, yeah, they're wrong, they're greedy for the collapse of the agricultural sector. But yet, at the same time, BFAP says, well, to survive on food, you need at least 150 a day. And even that is too little. I think, Chair, what we really need to find is a win-win solution, as Chair said in the morning. Pay above the minimum wage. Chair, to mention one stat, in the EU today, the average cow on a farm receives about 30 rand a day subsidy to the state, in the European Union. Somehow we expect our agricultural sector, to compete with the EU. You can see in France, when farmers are not happy, they take the tractors to Paris and they blockade the street. In the US too, the Holy Grail do not have farmer subsidies. And I think, Chair, we're a little bit unfair in South Africa that we're so eager to compete in a liberalized free market economy that we risk all these protections for agricultural sector. And perhaps we want to governments or explore for governments and correctly to sustain jobs in the carbon factory sector and economy. But the creative ways, win-win ways, benefit, you create jobs, you create decent jobs, Chair. I think lastly, Chair, I think the idea of minimum wage is about having a decent living condition, because one kind of minimum wage is 5 rand a day, and that would be a slave wage in reality. So not just about 105 rand a day, but for a decent minimum living condition wage. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you so much. Any more hands that I'm ready to have? Another
Thank you. There is this precedent for Evergreen that if you one day with this living minimum wage, then I will replace you with the missionary. But this thing of skills, in a straight talk, is that I will bring machine in the place of the worker. Because if there was a compliance from the farmer's point of view, the Skills and Development Act is requiring them for every employer to train people. But if that is not happening, it's only going to be attended to when the workers are demanding the living wage that they deserve. Then it becomes a very big problem. So, on page 5, the Agri-SA themselves accepted that any person earning 150 rand a day cannot afford a property. It's not me, it's from the document. So, but at the same time, Agri-SA is saying 105 rand is too much. So, I'm asking Agri-SA, you have no human can live in a household of two or four people can live with 150 rand a day. What is your proposal? Because my proposal is no employee in the farm industry should earn less than 5,000 rand. That's mine. But there are the farm workers, there are the employers. What is their proposal to remedy the situation? Because they see that people less than how any human being can live with.
There is no other hand. Yeah, this marriage must come to an end. So I'll be exposed, especially because married.
Well, that's great.
Please, RSC. Now, the marriage not only between two of them, between three of them. Yeah,
and it's not only...
We can make
it four.
Okay, over to you.
Thank you, Minister. I'm going to reply to some of these, and then Mr. Panamera will do the rest. I would really like to reject with contempt the statement that farm workers in South Africa have been treated as slaves. I'm sorry. If it happens, please tell us where, so that we can go and look at it. The farming area where I come from, the farm workers are happy. They are not being treated as slaves. They have hours, they have minimum wages, which we welcome under the decorum determination. They have decent housing. Honestly, I'm sorry, I cannot, I feel it's an insult to say that we treat our employees as slaves. I'm really sorry about that. I cannot accept that. With regard unemployed, with agri-feeder, we have finances and we are constantly having courses to employ, to educate and train unemployed people. We have one going in KwaZulu-Natal, we have one going up in the Limpopo, we have a very big one running near Upington, where we are training unemployed people, skills that they can use to further themselves and to run their own businesses. Those are just the three that I can think of now. I'm sure if I had stretched my mind, I could have a few more. But with every seat of finance, we are involved in training people, training unemployed people. What was said that I mentioned to keep them busy, that was just an idea, or just maybe it's a bad play of words, that they are being employed. They are not being evicted. To keep them busy, in other words, to keep them employed, so they have a reason to get up in the morning school and to have a day's work lying ahead of them. With the hours and with the minimum wage, and as I said, we welcome the sectoral determination, because that's brought stability and clarity as far as these things are concerned.
Thank you, Jim. I've tried to look at all of them. I think my colleague chairperson responded to this slavery accusation. I clearly seen them as the point made, don't actual endowments that make it possible to produce and try to compete, but eventually you might also be competitive businesses, and the competitiveness of businesses also depends on a number of things done and available through public and private inputs. In business terms, you usually talk about the cost of doing business in South Africa. How does that affect the environment in which businesses can assess their viability and growth opportunities? And again, the National Development Plan mentioned a number of them. I think they addressed the regulatory framework as well. They made mention of it. But infrastructural things, the need for training, education, agriculture, extension services, a number of things are required to take us forward. We have problems with the cost of administered clients. A number of them escalate well above the average inflation rate. And that erodes eventually the prospects of businesses to be competitive. So it's a whole range of things, and I think we were quite clear that we do not talk in isolation of the minimum wage in addressing it, but eventually if you put it together, it has an impact, and we must unpack it basically to start to deal with it in a comprehensive and a more focused manner. Where is the highest paid workers? You will find it most probably in the Western Cape, some of the economic hubs of the country dictate basically what wages for, especially for skilled workers are. And both in Gauteng and the Western Cape, I think they are in a competitive environment with other sectors of the economy. And I would agree that probably where the highest paid workers in agriculture will find it. To be clear about it, I think my paper was, and I pointed specifically to a paragraph on the second last page of my presentation, saying that there are a number of issues that must be factored in when the national minimum wage is considered. I think it should be clear that we have major concerns with the national minimum wage that doesn't take into consideration the peculiarities of agriculture, and therefore we, with the problems that we do have, maybe about the level of determination for agriculture, we prefer a sector specific determination and not the general minimum wage. On the issue the industrial workers in Brazil, I think there was responded to it. Fact of the matter is, I think my colleague has already alluded to it, the productive output of an employee is part of sustaining a business and sustaining a job opportunity as well. It's not the issue of just having idle people hanging around. I think it is a productive sector, and there must be a productive input as well. And to over fence, for sure, Jeff, we're not looking over the fence to Zimbabwe and Mozambique and other countries. What I just stated is economic reality, and that is that with different cost structures and different opportunities, we will see a migration of businesses and development of the sector on that side, and it will have an implication on where our food will come from and what the opportunities for local producers will be. So I think the document is really just the reality. The issue of training, we cannot overemphasize the need for extending skills training. Globally, agriculture, if you look at the growth opportunities in businesses globally,
produce more and apply more technology in order to stay competitive and improve in an environment where you must actually make our footprint smaller. We must double production in the next couple of decades to feed the world. And that will not only require new technologies, but also much higher skills to apply these technologies in the right way to enhance production. So we do have, it cannot be only farmers, it can be managers, it can be workers as well, that have to apply new technologies on them. So the issue of agricultural colleges, which makes you cater for education from school level, apart from vocational training, is a very important aspect that is a focal area of future agricultural planning, and we should put a lot of effort into it. I think I made it clear that what our view is on a national minimum wage. We have collaborated actively with the Department of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries for the drawing up, writing of the Agricultural Policy Action Plan. Under the new administration, I think it is still under consideration what exactly the implementation structure would be. But I believe it is in line with the National Development Plan, and it addresses from the Department of Agriculture responsibility side, I think, the right issues. But, Madam Chair, agriculture isn't only the responsibility of the Agriculture, Forest and Fishery Ministry. As you just hear today, the labor matters are an issue for the Ministry of Labor. We have water, we use 60% of the country's water as water and scarce resource. We use electricity, we use roads, we trade. So it is a very complex sector involving basically multitudes of ministries and departments. And what we usually find is that maybe no intentions on specific policy areas, but now they link up with other initiatives and approaches. I'm not always that well attended to, and hopefully the IPAC policy framework will provide us with a vehicle to more adequately address the developmental challenges of agriculture. I think what the spokesman shouldn't raise to the bottom, I think again I can agree that the APAC should provide for it, and there are a number of interventions that I think can play a role, but there are policies that are currently being debated around some of these issues, not all conclusively. Fact of the matter is that we do not speak with the split tongue. International trade discussions, while we have a policy of low support and low protection, we propagate also approaches that would lead to the lowering of protection and subsidies, especially the industrialized nations. Fact of the matter is that they are moving very slowly on liberalizing their own agricultural economies, and that we have to live with that reality. At present, we have low levels of protection. We do have levels of protection that can be viewed as some form of transfer also to producers. But that trade environment is part of what is also fueling structural adjustments in the sector, major contributing factor. So it's a big debate, and we're willing to have with COSAT and whoever a discussion on synergies between policy options. Global economic, I think I have responded to some level, decent living wage. Just want to reiterate here, I don't know what government's view is. Is there a difference between protecting vulnerable workers with a minimum wage, second tier, right? What is a decent wage and a living wage? I think we should find each other also on terminology that we use. Of course, we do not regard, and I know that the concern and how difficult it is, the figures as mentioned, what the average wage is and what we can learn from that. But our approach is that sectoral determination for agriculture set an entry level wage, and contrary to what's being said, I can enlighten that person with a number of things that we really promote people that are in a position to pay decent wages and good social wages as well as their work. So I think to say we are not doing it, it's indicative of ignorance of what we really need to do. The honorable member from the Freedom Front about stress being replaced by machine, it's not that I'm saying
Thank you, sir. So.
Yeah, thanks, sir. As much as we are listening to this input from Madhavi, but yeah, you know, I don't know, sometimes you get, they normally say, when you get into the situation where sometimes you become so very much angry, you get expressed without doing your own damage. Some of the things are very much disturbing, to say, the reality is out there. Farm workers are bearing the brunt of the situation out there. But now, as I say, it's not something workers have explained. My experience has shown that in a number of occasions where we have engaged at the FA and other agricultural institutions, I'm surprised to present them because I normally don't see them anymore. I last saw them when they walk out of the meeting before in 2011. Agricultural Union. Because sometimes they will come and talk to some of the issues, but it's different thing that now what they talk here is something that not happening. It's different what their members or they are doing outside there. It's very much disturbing in that particular aspect. And they continue to look. I should think that there must be sometimes people have sometimes. We look into the production inputs. When the guys are doing that, they are real business. What is the production input and what is an outcome? One colleague or comrade has alluded to say they are only giving out the figures. They don't give the profit margin. At the same time, sometimes we must come to that. And I continue to be worried, Mr. President, because what can I say that is liability? We are not liability. We are not liability. Every time that people have to cut costs, you must look into the workers. Last time I told one of the managers, say, look, we are tired of being shocked about the opposition. When they talk about economic crisis, when they talk about the things that are not going well, first people to be hit are the workers. We don't own any means of production. We are selling our labor. We are selling our labor. And please, we met and we went out with some of the residents of Agri-SA in Netherlands. We are trying to put the issue of the pension fund of the government. And it's a question here, we're talking about 2,400. How much is 2,400? You're sitting there with people who are not sick. You know, sometimes the salaries are called take home. But they can't take you home here. There's one problem in there. You come here today, tomorrow you don't have the money to come to work. But they told you to take home. There's nothing. You must be there to fix that issue. And then you look into that. You're dealing with people who don't have a social security. To me, agricultural sector, together with the institution within the agriculture, they are breeding problems for the government. When you look into the statistics, we're saying, when we started to the social graph in 1994, or after 1994, it was at 2 million. Now we are sitting at 16 million. Why do we expect farm workers that are not having a security in terms of the social security? Obviously, they will go to the government. The government must get them. So I should think we need to be there. And somebody else is taking the money, smiling to the bank sector. Go and read the get black or whatsoever they call it, some of these documents, and see how much is a ton of a wheat, how much is a kilo of a meat. If I want to talk in Africa, I can tell you they are making a huge money. I can't say it in Africa, but they are making a killing in this area. I think sometimes we come here and look into the reality and say, look into this. And these are the workers that you see them 5 o'clock in the morning when you try sometimes. Sometimes I think sometimes I have to leave my house.
then you'll pass the sweat upper level, walking on the title level. You come back as such that they late, they after the job, they'll still be on the title level. Just have to look at the they've got nothing else. So but I should think we need to talk to this issue and put it really in the real mind. And say there's one issue I wanted to address, but it's not pertaining the presentation itself. I thought maybe one would make it at the end. But this committee must pronounce itself. It's not something out there. I might be out of order, but this committee must pronounce itself clearly on the transportation of the farm workers. I have a full range of it. I don't even buy a fairly one time. We have very 24 in commerce work. A wheel-up wheel, but another one in push factories. Look into the length of transport that they are using. And I think the committee must also take it. Thank you so much. I don't want to bring that as soon as we can do this one.
Thank you so much. I think we should continue using the word laborers. I think we can talk about production, more especially when it's objected to, because we really have to definitely that different kind of when you are defining slaves, you have different interpretation, but there should be one interpretation of slaves. So I think let's not use that term of slaves. That's appealing to suggest. Let's make you the slave first. There is one hand from Honorable Mandashi. Chair, thank you for allowing me to speak before my week. All my team will wind up the debate. But Chair, I try to appreciate the fact that this organization, the SA, works together with the speaker at the other state, as the honorable speaker has presented. For instance, I also could be exposed to the type of training offered under that scheme and the services especially with the ladies available to us. The reason why I say so, I hear them saying they would rather mechanize than using human beings. And for me the two contrasts with each other. And I have one thing that is worrying me, okay. That as we, you know, put facts on the table, our friends are putting facts on the table, they are not talking about the profits that they made before the session, wherein their workers are not benefited. Because definitely every business has a reserve in place to cushion it for rainy days. While the sun was still shining before recession, those reserves are now to augment the hardship that is experienced by the sector. If we are all, you know, in the same playing field as citizens of the country, that has a responsibility, a collective responsibility to ensure that we improve the lives of the ordinary people. This is the appeal I'm making to the organization. That it is unfortunate we don't want to know how much they made before the session. The work that they made then, that those poor workers had never tasted, we should could augment their situation now. They have to pay at least today. We are not, we don't have a great deal to pay. But a human being would think is that question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to say, as far as wine farmers are concerned, a wine farmer gets between 1.50 and 2 rand per bottle of wine on the farm. That I spoke to a wine farmer friend of mine yesterday. And you know, if you go anywhere, if you're too lucky, you'll get it for 20 or 25 or 30 rand. And in the restaurants, you can go up to 150 and 200 rand sometimes. That is not the farmer's money that's going there. So, as I say again, we are price takers. They offer you that, and if you either take it or you don't, and then you have to drink it yourself. That's a bit detrimental to the whole business that you're in. These people that one of the previous speakers spoke about, these workers that are on the road early in the morning and late at night, or late in the afternoons, I'm quite sure that they will be earning overtime. Because that is one of the rules that we are complying with. If you work more than this number of hours per day, those hours must be registered, and they are being paid overtime. So I once again want to say that we are not exploiting the people, and that's what the inspectors and inspections are for, to make sure that those rules are being complied with.
There were a couple of remarks and not questions, but to regulate prices in the system, I think that then you will have to regulate basically everything. And I think it's still basically a market economy, so I think you cannot go that route. That's not on. The issue of putting away something for a rainy day. I think any progressive farmer will most probably try to budget for that. But official figures are available on the debt situation in agriculture, the net profit situation, distribution of that between subsectors. So I'm sure your secretariat will find it with the Department of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries. There are official figures. A number of people inquired about it, but in this forum seems to be eager to have insight into it, and those information is available. What I have clarity on already, information, I want to have the net farm income last year. This increased with 3.3% against that of the previous year. That's official figures. Apart from a couple of regions, it was in the Northwest province, some areas in the Northern Cape, we had really excellent climatic conditions. Coupled with the weakening of the rand, we experienced above buying earnings from exports from a number of subsectors. So it was, if you look at how the market conditions and the climatic conditions, it was very favorable. And under these conditions, the net farm income increased by 3.3%. If we do not have the same this year, we can go the other way around. So there are incentive schemes available in the area at the land bank to make it possible for farmers that have to put money away if they in drought situations and have to sell off stock. There is also a special scheme for that. But if you look at the total debt situation of agriculture, it's still escalating. It's still escalating under these circumstances. But the figures are available. I think we cannot be to know a lecture on all the agriculture economic
circumstances, we have come to the end of our studies and wish to tell you once more our gratitude for being patient with our questions, because we question, we don't question if we know, we question because we want to know more. And we appreciate the questions, and for the guests who only come, and the new ones, we also thank you because your contribution, your questions, statements that you do are also assisting us in what you want to achieve. So thank you so much. And thank you so much. There is lunch that has been arranged. We need the directors, where it is, and the meeting is adjourned.